Welcome to the Square Peg Show for March 31st, 2014. I'm Mike.
I'm Jesse.
And I'm Jill.
And that's our first guest of the new season, and we're here to discuss the new season of Game of Thrones, the whole episode, Game of Thrones, all about it.
Yeah!
So we're really excited to get into it. First, we want to plug the Square Peg Show. For those that this is your first episode, if you discovered it on iTunes or a different podcast provider, feel free to visit our website at squarepegshow.com, and we discuss movies, TVs, and topics related to that.
Absolutely. Get us on Facebook, on Twitter, and leave us some comments, send us an email, whatever, man. We want to hear from you.
Yeah, our social media is pretty active, too. We tend to share a lot of links and stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into it. Game of Thrones, obviously, I wanted to set up a few parameters real quick. I feel like I'm somewhere between casual fan and uber diehard fan.
Right.
So, I mean, what about you guys? I haven't really had an in-depth conversation with you guys about it yet. So,
As far as being a fan, I want to get a tattoo of Game of Thrones on my penis. So if that kind of tells you anything. I really, really love it. And I've started reading the books. They're just too damn long. But I'd say I'm a pretty damn hardcore fan.
Okay. Jill?
I am absolutely a hardcore fan. I have about 200 pages left of the fifth book. I've read first four books. Yeah, I really quickly became a complete hardcore nerd about both the show and the books. And so, yeah, it's probably my favorite show of all time and some of my favorite books of all time.
We might have a full-fledged, aficionado here, man.
Awesome. And any listeners, for the purposes of this show, we will not be going into anything in the books that happen after the last episode of the show. But we will talk about a few things maybe that happened in the books before the last episode,
right,
if that makes any sense. So that's the way I was kind of looking at it for this show.
Actually, I wouldn't mind hearing some stuff that may or may not have happened, or that actually may not have happened in the show. I've actually heard of several other characters that were kind of prevalent in the books that didn't show up in the show at all.
Okay, let's get into that in a moment. First, I wanted to talk about first impressions, how you first heard of the show or the books, what you thought of it when people were telling you, you must read this, you must watch this, and then what you thought when you finally tried it.
Go for it, Jill.
Okay, so I first heard about the show on Facebook. People were talking it up, and this was when the very first episode came out. People were like, oh, you got to watch this great show. It's based on these books. Everyone should watch it. And so I was like, oh, that sounds cool. I'll check it out. And so I watched the first season and really, really liked it. And then I got the first book and started reading it. And once I started reading the books, that was what really hooked me in. And
it was all over.
Oh, yeah. And so watching the seasons, reading the books, I was hooked pretty quickly.
I have a stereotype about fantasy. I really thought it would be very heavy on, supernatural elements,
right,
or,
magic and monsters and such.
Medieval speak. And,
yeah.
Which, there's a good place for that. I'm not trying to disparage the whole thing, but to me, how Battlestar Galactica was a bit more like sci-fi for a broader audience. Well, did you hate it from the beginning, Battlestar? I'm talking about from
it,
the...
It was just boring.
Okay. So, for most people that enjoyed the show, my point was, it was kind of like sci-fi for a broader audience. And to me, for Game of Thrones, it was a bit
for a broader audience. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, but I was lucky enough that when I'm watching the first season, I didn't know when they were talking about the urban legends of dragons or the urban legends of the White Walkers. I guess it would be kind of disappointing if all that turned out to be fake,
Yeah.
But it was so cool. All these reveals, with Daenerys at the very end of season one,
right,
when she comes out and the dragon is hatched on her shoulder.
Yeah.
These are
very,
great,
very cool.
Great cliffhangers. To me, season one, the cliffhangers were amazing,
yes.
What was it? Bran, I think his name is the boy.
The little boy fell out of the window, Bran.
Well, got pushed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a great cliffhanger. I could go on, but that was something that really drew me into the show.
Absolutely. One of the coolest things I like about it is, like you were saying, it's not just in your face magic and monsters and stuff. It's very much set in a realistic world, and that's what kind of gets you in. But then they'll start to just slip in these little tiny elements here and there of fantasy and magic and stuff like that. And some of the repeating language is really what got me into it. I'll be honest with you, the first time I saw the show, I didn't really like it. I went through the whole first season, and I was like, there is so much going on, there's no way I can possibly keep up with all of this.
Right.
But right as the second season was coming out, like Jill was just saying, I went back and rewatched the whole first season, and then it all started to click. And then whenever I got into the second season, I did the same thing for the second season right before the third season. So I watched all of that right before. I'm going to do it again for, the new season.
Game of Thrones is no joke. They have dozens and dozens of characters, and they expect you to keep up. If you don't, hey, rewatch it, reread it, you know?
Well, I mean, and there's so much that happens even before the show, the timeline of the show starts. So it's like, you got to understand why there was this Mad King and why all these things were happening, what really kicked the whole thing off. And I've asked that question to several people, and I asked to anyone out there who's listening, and to you, Jill, as well, what was it? What was the one event that kicked this whole thing off? What started Game of Thrones?
Started the whole thing?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, in the story, it's the death of I think it's John Arryn is his name.
Right.
That starts everything off, because Ned starts looking into that, and that's how he finds out that Robert Baratheon's children might not really be his.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's it, within the book, and I think the show tries to stay true to this, that's the thing that sets off what we're seeing, you know, this battle between the Starks and the Lannisters, and that main part. But there's so much history. I think that's a complicated question.
It is. It very much is. And I love asking it, because I always get a different answer. And that's usually the one that I get is John, the death of John Arryn, because he kind of figured out what was happening. Mm-hmm. But I've even heard a couple people saying that it was Jaime Lannister that started the whole thing off. Killing the Mad King threw the whole thing kind of into turmoil. And I mean, I've heard it even further back than that. It's just, it's really cool to ask a lot of people that question.
So you're definitely talking about within the world of the story.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just real quick, this is skipping ahead to season three, but when it came to the reveal of what truly happened between the Mad King and Jaime Lannister, that was awesome. I think it was the scene with Brienne in the bathhouse, or wherever they were.
Yep.
Super great.
Well, and Jaime is one of those characters who grows so much from the beginning. You think he's one way in the first season,
right,
and you realize that he's not what people have perceived him as at all. And a lot of the characters are like that. And that's one of the things I love so much about the show, is the way you have one idea about what it is, and then as you get closer to the characters, you realize you've been looking at things the wrong way all along.
Right.
I think that when it comes to all of the Lannister children, they could have been pretty different if they hadn't grown up as they did, you know. And Jaime, when he is around all these people that hate him and everything, all the wealth that he stands for, and then that one guy's all fuck it and just chops his hand off. You want to talk about a great cliffhanger? Yeah. That was a good one.
Speaking of characters actually developing, and that's interesting, because I mean, there's so many characters that go through that, including Daenerys, including Jaime, including Sansa. And Sansa is the one character that I end up defending more than anyone.
Sansa, right?
Sansa, yeah.
Sansa.
Everyone hates her guts for some reason. And I keep saying this is one of the characters who's grown so much, because she's been raised this whole time to see the world this way. And now the sheath is ripped off of her eyes, and she can see how it really is, and she has to adapt. But she's trapped. She has nowhere to go, and all she can do is make tiny little movements to further her own cause. But
she's a prisoner.
Yes. And I have to defend her all the time, and just people bash her all the time. It makes me crazy.
Well, I wonder if they just respond because she began as such a stereotypical girly girl.
She's a whiny little girl.
But she serves a good contrast to Arya and Sansa. I mean, they're sisters, but they couldn't be farther apart personality-wise.
Absolutely.
And I hated Sansa as well up until the moment that she sees her father get his head chopped off. I think that is the point where Sansa realizes life is not a fairy tale, and things are not going to end well for her. And I think from then on, she starts to become a much more interesting character.
Definitely.
For the viewers, too, the Ned Stark decapitation,
oh my God,
a huge moment, because we are so used. We've read and seen so many stories where the hero always wins.
Mm-hmm.
Ned Stark, to me, was a hero. But in the world of Game of Thrones, love and honor and loyalty are weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Ned, it was really stupid of him to go up to Cersei and say, this is exactly what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And then when she tore up the document right in front of him, just such a great moment.
And I think another thing, like, that was one of the moments that hooked me in the show, because I hadn't read the books yet at that point. And so I was watching, and it was like getting to this point where, are they going to pardon him? Are they not? And you're thinking, this is Sean Bean. This is the biggest actor on the show.
Yep.
They wouldn't kill him off. And then they do it. And you're like, no way. This show just broke all the rules.
Yeah.
And that's one of the hook moments of the first season.
have any of you been spoiled by book fans? Because so far it seems like the book fans have been kind of respectful towards the TV fans.
Yeah. I haven't heard. Usually they're always like, you know, they don't want to tell you anything because it's such an awesome reveal for them as they're reading the book and watching the show. It's so worth it to make sure that you're not spoiling something for someone in a story like this, I think.
So when Ned dies, then you would think, okay, here comes the revenge story.
Right.
And two seasons later, Robb Stark and Catelyn Stark we all know what happened. And the reactions on YouTube, by the way, to both Ned Stark being killed and then the Red Wedding, they're just hilarious. People are so invested in these characters for good reason because the writing is so good.
Yeah.
And to see that, I mean, what's going to happen next? Is the third person, like Arya, is she going to be brutally killed the next season?
This is the thing I keep thinking about, and is Tyrion going to end up biting it? Now I haven't read any of the books further, and Jill, you probably know the answer, but please don't tell me. But it makes me wonder. It's like if they got no trouble killing these characters that they've built you up to love, this is one of the characters that everyone likes. Everyone says, "Oh, I love Peter Dinklage. That guy is awesome." Does that mean they're going to turn around next season and be like, "Nah," right in the head?
And it creates a great level of tension throughout the whole story.
Absolutely, because any one of your favorite characters could die at any minute. I mean, you know, Spider-Man's going to make it through the end of the movie, but you know, Tyrion might not. So. Yeah, dude, there's so many characters I can't even go into them, I think.
Well, I wanted to name a few of my favorites. And I sometimes I get the names and locations of this place mixed up, or of this whole thing mixed up, but it's I think his name is Braum, who is Tyrion's right-hand man.
Bronn,
yeah.
Bronn, oh man, he is so cool. He just oozes cool, you know?
He said the line, "There's no cure for being a cunt," and I was like, oh my god, yes.
So he's one of my favorite, if I had to name like a top five. What about you guys?
Hodor.
By far,
Hodor. Hodor is probably the coolest one-word character that's ever been written on the face of the planet. Number one, he's giant, and he has no trouble showing off his ginormous wang on camera. But he can emote so many, a whole range of things with one word, and it's amazing. Now, the one thing I do know about this character and from the books is that his name is not actually Hodor. He actually has a different name, but that's the only word he's ever been able to muster, so they just call him Hodor. I can't remember his real name. Do you remember, Jill?
I don't remember. That's in the book. But
it was kind of a normal name, but for some reason, Hodor is the only word he can get out. How about you, Jill?
So my favorite character, and this is where we get into the difference between the books and the show, because this is not my favorite character in the show, but my favorite character in the books is Theon. He is just...
Really?
Yeah, he is the most tragic figure, I think. And the reason why I say it's different in the books is that, so we see in the show, we see him in season one fighting next to Robb, and then in season two, he betrays the Starks, but he's doing it to try and, you know, win back the favor of his family.
Right.
And then in the third season, we see him being tortured. What's so great about the books is that we're in Theon's head when those things are happening.
Right.
And it's so completely different. To watch him be tortured is hard to watch, but to be inside his head and to know what he's thinking and the psychological trauma that's caused to him by what is done to him.
Right.
I don't know. I just think he's the most psychologically broken character of all the characters in the books, and I find him extremely fascinating.
He grew up in... I couldn't understand in the first season, was he like held captive by the Starks?
He was kind of taken on as a ward. I think when...
Seemed like he couldn't leave if he wanted to.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Jill, but Ned pretty much took him in as kind of his ward when the Greyjoys tried to take over the throne and they were kind of pushed back. Is that right?
Exactly. He was a ward, but he was basically a hostage. So it was, if the Greyjoys decided to rise up again, Ned was going to kill Theon. So Theon was treated well, but he was a hostage.
Oh, I gotcha.
I don't have any characters I dislike, but there was one storyline that was a little confusing in season three, was when Theon was being tortured because he didn't know who was doing it or where they were and all that. But then I thought the reveal at the end of that was kind of cool about what all was happening. Other characters I really love are Littlefinger and what's the other fellow's name? Varys.
Yes.
The way
Spider.
That I mean, basically throughout the whole show, they've been having this big philosophical discussion about, you know, how do you take care of others, or you only care about yourself? Mm-hmm. And the way that they go back and forth, and, you know, how Littlefinger had the famous sex position, they called it, when mm-hmm. he's telling the two prostitutes about the best way to strategize and all that during right. this massive sex scene going on. but, you know, funny stuff like that. But those two characters, I mean, they pull the strings on a lot. They got spies everywhere, absolutely. And it's really interesting to see them battle, like, to the wits.
They're too, you know, they are, I guess, arguably more devious than Cersei and some of these other characters. They are the puppet masters behind so many things that, you know, they're kind of minor characters, but they really are controlling many of the things that we see happening.
And Littlefinger in particular, I mean, he is only out there to get, what, his own kingdom, it seems like.
And Catelyn, if he can.
Oh, yeah, he does have that long... Oh, well, it's too late now, right?
Anymore, yeah,
did this show in that last episode Littlefinger's reaction to that? I don't recall. I don't recall that either. So maybe that'll be in season 4, I suppose. But oh, okay, let's go ahead and talk about season 4 since we're approaching the end here. Have you guys watched the trailers? Or yes. Are you interested in watching the trailers?
Mm-hmm. I actually have not. I've been trying to keep a media blackout for that because all I right. want to come into it completely fresh.
Well, let's not go into it then. But we can put a link of it on the website.
We can talk about it. That's fine.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, it just looks badass. I mean, we said this on the podcast already. It seems like everybody is most excited about this season. And and we should also talk about the conflict between HBO and George R.R. Martin. George R.R. Martin is only going to have 2 more books left, but he is somewhat of a slow writer. These books are massive, right? Mm-hmm. So, but there's no way to do like 10, 11 seasons of this because you have child actors.
Right.
HBO or the showrunners only want to do 7 seasons. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to compress a lot of the later books into the show.
Yeah, something's going to have to give on that point. And that sucks, man, because it kind of opens this door for this amazing party, but it all gets shut down at 9:30, and that sucks.
It's very likely that the show will have the ending before the books do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they know the ending, or at least part of it. And then, hey, fans will have 2 completely different endings, right?
Well, and other interesting things are, in the 4th season, for some of the characters, they're already getting into the 5th book. So some of the character stuff will be from the 3rd book, but some will be from the 5th book because they've already used up everything that happens to those characters. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of things they do with characters who their storylines aren't fleshed out enough in the books to give them adequate screen time in the show. I've seen that happen in some of the previous seasons, and I've been very impressed with what the writers have come up with.
I heard that book 4 and 5 were basically set concurrently. They just split the cast in half and took, you know, some of it's happening in book 4 over here, some in book 5, or something along those lines, you know? So that is how big the books got. Is yeah. When you have that many characters, you got to do 2 books set at once. So,
So Jill, we only got a couple minutes here, but can you tell me about there's a character who was apparently in the books that never made it into the show, and
are you talking about Patchface?
Patchface, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about Patchface a little bit?
Patchface. So Patchface is a I can't remember what they call him. He's basically mentally retarded. He wears like a jester's outfit, and he's not bright, but he's very creepy and interesting in the book because he walks around singing things and he's singing, you know, he's observing what people are doing, and he takes what he's watching and he puts it into song and sings it, and it comes out sounding very profound, even though it's, you know, through the mind of this person who probably has the mentality of a 5-year-old. So that's something that's really interesting about that character, and that's something you get from the book that you don't get in the show.
Yeah, and I was actually told about that, and there's apparently one of the episodes that had kind of a... it was one of the ending songs, the end credit songs, that actually apparently was taken from Patchface's songs in the book. I don't remember which
one. The Bear and the Maiden? Is that the one?
It's not The Bear and the Maiden, because that one is like a... I don't know. That's the Hey Ya in Westeros.
Yeah.
It's the big hit that everybody knows. But yeah, Patchface does... He has a song that he sings that's in the book, and I can't remember what it's called. But yeah, I feel like I remembered it being at the end of the show.
Well, we'll figure it out, and we'll put it up on the website just to have it there. But
all right, so we're kind of approaching the conclusion. We didn't really mention Joffrey or Daenerys or some other ones. Any other final thoughts about Game of Thrones going in? Because the new season begins April 6th. Mm-hmm. This will be season 4, which is pretty much the second half of book 3. I'm super excited. I mean, this show continues to surprise me. The level of betrayal and machinations going on and all this. I love it, man. And the world is so complex. I think it's just so much fun to watch this show, you know. And I have read the books a little bit. I'm going to try to do more of that, but
definitely.
Jill, any final thoughts?
I was interested, you know, because I've read the books and I know the answer to this question. I wanted to see if y'all wanted to speculate a little bit about what's going to happen in season 4.
Well, let's see. Joffrey hasn't gotten married yet, so that's going to be a big thing. Mm-hmm. I love the new bride-to-be. I think she's such a devious character, and her grandmother. I think they're both cool. Anything related to Tywin Lannister is super cool. I don't make predictions on the show. I would just be proven wrong.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I'm looking forward to the actors and the characters and everything.
Yeah. I don't know. I've only got a couple ideas, but I doubt any of them will actually flesh out. But one of the things I'm really looking forward to is Jon Snow actually getting some sort of
a point?
Well, I mean,
no, I don't mean that negative.
No, I mean, just like, I don't know. It's kind of getting his own name is kind of what I keep thinking, because I mean, obviously they call him Snow because he's a bastard, but just really bringing himself into the light as far as the Night's Watch.
I guess he'll be going back to the Wall.
Yeah,
and he has his friend Sam with him, who had been taking care of the woman that was held captive. Yeah, yeah, thank you. The daughter, the incestual situation with the baby and everything, fighting off White Walkers like the biggest badass on Game of Thrones. But anyway, so Jon Snow will be probably, I'm guessing he'll be back there and trying to pick up where he left off before he went undercover and everything.
Here's the one thing I think it might happen. I want to see Bran warg into a dragon. That's what I want to see.
That would be cool. That would be very cool. The dragons are getting bigger.
Yeah.
And the special effects look amazing.
Yeah.
You said you didn't want to hear too much about the trailer, but that was one of the things that really stood out.
Awesome. Very cool.
And so one thing that was set up at the end of season 3 that is going to have to come in season 4, and I can't wait to see how they do it in the show, is the wildlings are coming to attack the Wall.
Yes.
And so I think that's going to be some, like, I'm thinking this is going to be on the scale of from season 2 where they had the attack on King's Landing.
On Blackwater Bay.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of the biggest, most exciting things that we'll see happen in the 4th season.
Definitely.
Blackwater Bay was interesting because if you think about season 1, there weren't very many giant fight sequences, mm-hmm. or battles, I should say, on the show. So when they actually got to Blackwater Bay,
yeah.
they wanted to do it upright. God, remember like Tyrion got knocked unconscious right at the beginning of a battle in season 1. So in season 2, they showed a great, I mean, that was an amazing episode.
Mm-hmm. Said, there were brave people at your door. Let's go kill them.
Oh, you want to talk about great moments? I love. Oh yeah, for you mean the Blackwater episode?
Yes.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. And then for what Jill just said with the battle, I'd actually kind of forgotten about the whole the wildlings and everything. The attack that didn't feature too much in season 3.
Right.
That was kind of the major cliffhanger of season 2 when we finally got to see that really cool White Walker
Walkers.
And everything. So, I mean, I guess there is a difference between White Walkers and wildlings, but anyway, that should be a cool
Hopefully
scene.
We'll see the giant a little bit more. Because we got to see him in, like, what, the first episode of season 3? And
yeah,
and that, was,
that was cool.
So, anyway.
All right. Well, this was a lot of fun. Thank you, Jill. We'd love to have you back and talk about Game of Thrones sometime during the progress of season 4. But anyway, any other things to say?
Nope. See you guys later.
Thanks a lot, Jill. And you can – by the way, Jesse has a few things to say about where you can find us. And have a good day.
Hey guys, just a quick reminder that if any of you would like to be on the show, suggest topics for the show, or just have questions or comments, please let us know at squarepegshow@gmail.com or on our website, squarepegshow.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe to us on iTunes. So until next time, guys, be square.